Okay, next item on the agenda is the report from our local GM. For those of you who are new, the custom is that whenever we're having one of these meetings, that the local general manager makes a report to us. And Grigsby Hubbard. He is acknowledged he have some time for her, but it's his report.
Good afternoon, all.
Good afternoon.
And I'll repeat a welcome to Washington, D.C. and to the place where WPFW, it's about to mark its 33rd year on the air. Brian's remarks provide some context in history and place, and I would point out that we're just five blocks south of where Carter G. Woodson transformed all of historiography by advancing the notion that ordinary people's lives matter. It was not just the creation of Negro History Week for February, but a very different notion of what documenting this human existence might mean. I've had to do the story of WPFW's origins at times of crisis, and I have to say in by context that in my first ever job with Pacifica these last 6 months, there have been very few occasions for real reflection or any chance to improvise at all. I've had many occasions to try to address things that were framed as issues or proceeding for things that were, you know, distortions or part of a pre-existing struggle. This station has differed from other Pacifica stations substantially from the beginning, and yet little is understood about how we got there. It's interesting that one of the master narratives of conflict within the network is the way things are restated in this tension between national and local autonomy is they're coming to take our music. There are also ways in which that tension is always persistently in some way coded and more than subtly racialized. But I began work actually in 1968, the same time there was a first national presence of Pacifica in Washington, helping people, principally ones out of New York, to try to bring the station here. In the latter years, in the 70s, when there were all sorts of misadventures and corporate resistance to our very presence here, including a time where we deferred to a station now that is number one in our market, but then was just something we allowed as the first black-owned station in town. A lot of the work of deciding what kind of station in particular we would be was informed by some person who lived here, I was very close to, and who was always in danger of being deported, except they couldn't find a country that would even take him, including the country of Trinidad, where he's born. That was C.L.R. James. And he actually was the one who convinced me that this business of paying central attention to people's culture and the ways in which it may be marginalized was an important part of understanding the dialectic. It was an important part of engaging people so that we could move toward a sharper, deeper, more informed discourse based in how people really express themselves in a very untutored, uncontrolled way. So this station uniquely began in the spirit of jazz as part of a welcoming, inclusive, liberatory expression. Never, I repeat, never was there any notion that there should be any dichotomy between that and the typical litany of programming ideas that had been Pacifica from its origins. I've had another special opportunity, actually many years later, to work in this town with some of Lou Hill's good friends, their old CEOs. Some of you may know that I'm birthright Quaker. First time I came to this part of the country was for a demonstration at Fort Detrick, Maryland. I was 11 years old. When I was 11 years old, too, my mother's people got a name. They'd had several names in the ways that we often don't control who we are and how we're named. My mother's just old enough to have been born in the United States and not be a citizen when she was born. Indigenous people off the reservation didn't become citizens till 1924. 1958, a Klan gathering was foolish enough to try to hold a rally in the county I lived in, where we had three separate school systems, which is why I got to be homeschooled. Yeah. That Klan rally was not allowed to happen. 1958 was a little early for accounts of armed insurrection from colored people, so they quickly rushed to say, well, those are Indians. I want to make sure that I allow for time for LSB, and there's more than a marker, and I want to also retreat back to the prepared remarks, but I want to, dare I say, improvise just a bit and say that for all the lessons learned, and I'd be happy to share them with you, as is typical of most gatherings, some of the most important conversations are the ones that happen in the halls and not in the formal presentations, and I hope that we can find occasion for many more of those. I know I've learned a lot. And I want to say about our LSB that this work of hosting you is very much informed by beginning in conversations with our LSB members. I wouldn't think ever of attempting this without understanding the context as best I could be conveyed. And I hope that this is an emblem of the kind of work that's now going on here. It could not have happened without the very focused work of lots of very, very gifted and committed people, principally volunteers. I've noted again and again that we are the smallest staff within the network. There's lots that flows from that. I've come to realize one thing, that there is this tension built in, that apart from what psychologists would call negative transference, about all the old fights and people just reifying that and thinking that's the way things are. There may, in fact, be codified a tension between, curiously, but the national and local boards, such that however capable a manager you find in a job that places a premium on the abilities of a manager, not just to negotiate a station to survival, but moreover, as has been indicated, to realize the visionary possibilities of the multiple platforms and the growing necessity for what we're about. What we do gets to be more important by default, whether we do it well or not, every day. That tension between national and local station boards is so great that it may be true that no initiative on a general manager will go unpunished. I know that doing this work, typically demands a set of abilities and a temperament that's about as far away from the other part of the job as you can imagine. The part of the job that obliges you to sit passively and take abuse. I personally don't want to get better at that. I don't want to get better at being more cynical about how we're prepared to treat one another, how we're prepared to torture circumstances and just engage, even if they're principled disagreements. That said, let me read through, and won't deviate much from the text that I prepared. As the second decade of the 21st century begins, WPFW appears to be on the road to recovery. We now have more than 10 times the amount of money in the bank compared to only 6 months ago, when interim general manager Grigsby Hubbard started work. Morale among both paid and non-paid staff is high, and the staff is engaged in a very detailed preparation for its forthcoming February 1st through 8th and 19th through 28th drive. The station itself is noticeably being improved in many respects, from its physical appearance to the efficiency of its business operations. The long years of neglect of its technological infrastructure and of basic questions of technical and operational compliance are finally being tackled. Time-critical core concerns such as leasehold and labor agreements have been resolved. A newly constituted community advisory board that is both diverse and collegial has conducted productive meetings every other month since July. Moreover, the long, demanding, and costly election process met all of its benchmark goals. Systemic issues such as capacity building, revenue diversification, human resource management, including both paid and non-paid staff development, and a very much enhanced information system are also being addressed. A long-term strategic planning process that includes personnel restructuring for greater clarity, focus, and efficiency. A programming decision matrix that is more collaborative and mission responsive. And a major donor campaign to support the station's near-term required relocation is underway. Nonetheless, we need to affirm that many substantial problems, including the very real prospect of intervals of not being able to broadcast, persist. WPFW must find an alternative transmitter and antenna facility to accommodate planned lead abatement work on its present antenna located at American University. Not least among these problems is that the relationship between LSB governance and management has remained needlessly difficult and strained. Our greatest challenge as a station is still a severe deficit of trust. The job of management too often looks more political and administrative, more political than administrative or visionary. WPFW remains a unique and valuable institution. Many people are at work to put it on a solid, sustainable footing to continue this station's vital educational role in the advancement of understanding peace and justice among people in the years ahead. Thank you, Alonzo. Let me take a moment to, and I want to make this more interactive and make sure that I do, in fact, leave room for the comment from our local station board members. And Alex, thank you for speaking up and asking me to address this. It's a challenge to work my way through all of the things that are possible rebuttal. I stepped into a process where people who responded to the lack of their being brought into the process for whatever reason, quickly folded me into everything from allocations of being part of a coup, which is precisely the language that, you know, gets bandied about, to simply nobody talked to me, you know, which I have to suppose is true. And in at least one instance, you know, I've wanted to say many times, you know, as somebody, as this person keeps saying, well, we don't know who you are. And I'm saying, well, I certainly know who you are very well. You're the person that goes around and attacks me wherever I go. I also know who you are because you seem to have applied for every job at the station. But this is something that now we have, I have a very particular perspective on. I mean, we've heard a couple names today. Ron Pinchback is somebody I get to talk to all the time now. Cedric Franklin is somebody I talked to just an hour ago. These are things that, you know, it's a very convenient thing to, take up as a cudgel, any particular initiative, and to distort it. I mean, in the instance of a personnel action, which involved, you know, a lateral movement for which the person has finally very much thanked me, it's been just a handy, let's fit into a pattern. Let's fit this into the master narrative of, you know, how Pacifica does, how this station does, or however. I have posed a lot of very inconvenient facts for a lot of people who are the conspiracy mongers, having to do with, one, the master narrative about national, again, abusing PFW. I mean, particularly given the fact that there's a unique statement of PFW. And so there are lots of people who have spoken up about what National wants to do. And keep in mind, myths matter, and these storylines, these narratives matter. And there's always more than a germ of truth to them. I mean, one of the things I would say most critically is that we have a great need to learn how to listen to one another, and we are not doing much of that. And we need to have improved conversations with and amongst one another. We're not listening to one another's programming, and we're seeing through the filters of, you know, these images. But so we have this master narrative about people coming to take the music away and people not understanding, and that's, there's a lot of truth to that, of people not understanding, oh, it's just a jazz station, or it's, they play music all the time, and not understanding how, well, yeah, this is a recent topical example. The world of media discovered DFW in the last couple of weeks because they just discovered Haiti. We've been doing Haitian material since the first day we were on the air. We've had a Haitian show for over 20 years. That's why CNN and BBC and the Washington Post and every other local news channel and other AM radio, other FM radio stations have come to us in the last 2 weeks. Now, some people listen to the Haitian show for the music, but it has been the most vital source of information and analysis in three languages for more than two decades. Now, what is this phenomenon we're talking about? What is the phenomenon of a Zydeco show that actually you'll find out that there's a historian who routinely includes political comment and has a, you know, a fanatical following. I was intrigued by Brian's reference to Dvorak just last week. One of our music programmers, Brother Ah, decided we needed to know more about Dvorak. And we had a Tuesday evening of Dvorak on the jazz station with analysis of how that figured in American history. So I offered this, again, wandering away from specific rebuttal to say that I respect the spirit in which I would like to think that all of the comments are offered. And I'm certain that there's a good deal of misinformation there, and I know there's a lot of work there, but I don't want to trivialize or be dismissive of how hardened these attitudes are. We have collectively, and I suppose it begins with individuals, but we have collectively, because of our own life situations or where we, you know, a lot of different circumstances, not had a lot of courage to step up and make the difficult choices and accept the blowback. And that's one of the challenges we face as a foundation, as various boards, as we come together. I understand better why so many people on staff have backed off from taking courageous stands. If your goal is really to keep your job, you just want to cut deals and avoid conflict. And we are bearing the consequences of that writ large. I will yield the rest of my time to the board or take any questions that anyone has. Thank you.